Chapter 7. The Terror of the Twins. The ghost now gave up all hope of ever frightening this terrible American family. And he made himself feel happy just with creeping about the halls in slippers. While doing so, he wore a thick red sweater for fear of catching another cold. He also carried a gun in case he should be attacked by the twins. The final blow he received occurred on the 19th of September. He had gone downstairs to the great entry room, feeling sure that there, at any rate, he would be quite safe. And he was amusing himself by making jokes about the large photographs of the minister and his wife, which had now taken the place of the Canterville family pictures. He was simply but neatly dressed in a long robe and carried a small lantern and a spade. In fact, he was dressed for the character of Jonas the Graveless, one of his best costumes. It was one which the Cantervilles had every reason to remember, since it was the origin of their quarrel with their neighbor, Lord Rufford. It was about 2:15 in the morning. As far as he could tell, no one was moving around. As he was walking toward the library, however, to see if there were any traces left of the bloodstain, the twins suddenly leaped out at him from a dark corner, waved their arms wildly, and shouted out, "Boo!" in his ear. Overcome with panic, which under the circumstances was only natural, he rushed for the staircase. There he found Washington Otis waiting for him with a big garden tool. He was cornered by his enemies and seemed to have nowhere to escape. But he managed to disappear into the great iron stove, which, fortunately for him, was not lit. Then he had to make his way to his room through the chimney. He arrived in a terrible state of dirt and disorder. He was very upset. After this, he was not seen again at night. The twins lay in wait for him on several occasions. They even covered the halls with nutshells every night, to the great frustration of their parents and the servants, but nothing ever happened. It was quite evident that the ghost's feelings were so wounded that he would not appear. So life for the Otises went on. Mr. Otis worked on the history of the Democratic Party, on which he had been engaged for some years. Mrs. Otis organized a wonderful party, which amazed the whole county. The boys took to playing lacrosse. Virginia rode about on her pony. And the young Duke of Cheshire, who had come to spend the last week of his holidays at Canterville, rode with her. It was generally assumed that the ghost had gone away. In fact, Mr. Otis wrote a letter to that effect to Lord Canterville. In reply, Lord Canterville showed his great pleasure at the news and sent his congratulations to the family. The Otises, however, were mistaken. The ghost was still in the house. Though now almost an invalid, he was by no means ready to let matters rest, especially after he heard that the young Duke of Cheshire was among the house guests. The Duke's great-uncle, Lord Francis Stilton, had once made a bet with Colonel Carberry that he would play dice with the Canterville ghost. The next morning, he was found lying on the floor of the card room in a helpless state. And though he lived on to a great age, he was never able to say anything again but double sixes. The story was well known at the time. Of course, out of respect for the feelings of the two great families, every attempt was made to cover it up. The ghost, then, was naturally very anxious to show that he had not lost his influence over the Stiltons. In fact, he was connected to them because his own first cousin was married to the Sieur de Bucoli, the man from whom, as everyone knows, the Dukes of Cheshire are descended. Accordingly, he made arrangements for appearing to Virginia's friend. For this, he decided to dress as the vampire monk. On New Year's Eve, in the year 1764, he had dressed like this to scare old Lady Startup. It was a performance so horrible that she ran off screaming as loud as she could. Then, 3 days later, she died. At the last moment, however, his terror of the twins prevented him from leaving his room, so the young Duke slept in peace that night.